Hey, hey, here comes another edition of Talking Foosball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. I am your host, Matt Herman, and this week, you know, we're celebrating the Sweet 16 with me to revel in that generous gap at the top is Nick Wildhagen. Nick, can you believe it's come to this? We could get a new Bundesliga champion as early as next week.
Yeah. And I mean, talking about Sweet 16, our hair's thinning, so it's just kind of funny that two older guys in, one nearing 40, one in his 40s, are talking about Sweet 16. But yes, Bayer Leverkusen, wow, what a season. You know, I didn't foresee them being this dominant, being this good, but, well, who could tell that Bayern actually were level on points with Stuttgart with six matches to go.
Oh my God, I feel like this is a season that has gone from being, you know, mildly unusual to just, we've entered bizarro world, and I love it. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to talk the foosball after a break. Remember, you can get in touch with us anytime. podcast@talkingfoosball.com is the email address of choice. We also love good reviews on all the podcast platforms that offer you that option of rating. If you really want to help us out, give us some money on Patreon. We've got lots and lots of timeless content there. The archives are deep. We'll take you back through all six decades of Bundesliga history for just, you know, a couple of bucks a month. All right, here comes part one of Talking Foosball. This is the part where we talk about the big stuff. The big stuff this week, I kind of alluded to it in the intro. It's the biggest news in the history of this podcast. I mean, we've been doing this podcast. I believe this is the 11th season we've been doing this podcast. We started it right after Bayern won the first in what turned out to be 11 seasons of championship. Yeah, this weekend, match day 28. Bayer 04 Leverkusen, they edged past Union Berlin at the Alte Försterei. FC Bayern München, they blew a 2-0 lead to lose 3-2 away to FC Heidenheim, which means the pharmaceuticals are on the verge of putting Bayern's streak to bed. They're 16 points up. That means if Leverkusen win next week, no matter what Bayern do, they're champions. This feels disorienting, to be honest. It feels unreal. It feels like a solar eclipse could be rolling through any day from now. Nick, you actually predicted this, though, at the beginning of the season, at least a Bayer Leverkusen winning the league part. What's going on with you?
Yeah, I mean, my reasoning behind that was the fact that I thought that they had gotten a midfield general in Granit Xhaka, who was sort of tying that team together. I looked at their defenders and thought, they look good. This is a good, strong defense. I looked at Victor Boniface and thought, well, I've seen him in Norway. I've read about what he'd done in Belgium. I've seen what he'd done in Europe with Union Saint-Gilloise. And I thought, well, fitting all these pieces of the puzzle together, and if they do fit, this could be a championship-winning side, just on paper. But the most important reason behind all of this is actually the fact that they do have a coach in Xabi Alonso who has made them believe in themselves, first and foremost. I mean, there's a reason why we call Leverkusen not Neverkusen this season, but Leverkusen, because they score so many damn late goals this season. And this is just a team that never stops believing. I mean, against Karabakh in the Europa League, They were 2-1 down. They were out of the competition. Turn it around.
They turned over both of those matches. It was crazy.
Indeed, they did. I mean, they were 2-0 down in both of them, and, you know, 2-2 and 3-2 against Hoffenheim. 1-0 down. Never stopped believing, played their football, got rewarded in the end. Against Augsburg, never stopped believing, got the 1-0 in the end. Against Union Berlin really defending, early sending off, 10 men, niggly match, never stopped believing, got that penalty, tucked it away, victory never end out. So, I mean, it's sort of like a well-oiled machine, which is down to the coach and down to the players. And, I mean, Simon Rolf has revealed, I think in Elfreunde in September, that they had 5 big signings. And actually, for the first time in many, many years, all of the 5 signings were actually the first choice on that given position.
So they didn't have to settle for, you know, sloppy seconds, thirds, fourths, as they often do.
Nope. So they got Jonas Hofmann, they got Victor Boniface, they got Granit Xhaka, and look at how well those guys have, you know, contributed to that success story. I mean, all these factors combined mean that Bayer Leverkusen always were going to be a strong opponent for Bayern, and maybe even a challenger for the title, but at the end of the day, we have to say that when Bayern is equal on points with Stuttgart with six matches still to go, Bayern are having an off season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we want to switch gears over to Bayern just yet, but I do think that there's a lot to talk about with this team, and certainly all the members of the German football commentary at the Peanut Gallery are beginning to weigh in with their analyses of what's gone wrong, some of whom are more influential and Bayern influential than others. I wanted to keep it on Leverkusen, though, for a moment, because I saw a really interesting question. I don't know who posed it exactly on Twitter this week. Kind of asking, if Bayer win this league, win it undefeated, and win both the German Cup and the Europa League, is it one of the greatest football achievements of all time? This is one of the best seasons ever by any team ever.
I mean, Bayern won the treble twice. I mean, they won it under Hansi Flick. They won it under Jupp Heynckes, even though Bayer are supported by a company. They're not on a level playing field with, you know, a lot of the teams competing with them in the Europa League and a lot of the teams competing with them in the Bundesliga. I mean, Bayer Leverkusen, you know, they're not having the same amount of money as Borussia Dortmund, as RB Leipzig, as Bayern München especially. So if they were to win the treble and they were to go undefeated, yes, you know, I think it would definitely be a great contender for, you know, being the best season ever played by a Bundesliga side. So if you, you know, match up resources and see how much a team can do with the relatively small resources compared to, let's say, Bayern München or Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, it's never been done in the Bundesliga, an unbeaten season. But there is one German side, one with a very heavy asterisk next to this unbeaten season. This was the night.
Yeah.
This was in the DDR Oberliga.
You know, the time of the coincidental 107th minute penalty.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, BFC Dynamo Berlin, you know, 1983. They went unbeaten. I think they might have gotten by with a little help from their friends in black.
I think the friends in black were not as much their friends as, you know, being threatened by, you know, certain people.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Stasi, they come in all colors, not just black. Yeah, other potential candidates for this award, looking past Germany. Well, we can leave aside teams that won any domestic league alone, including the likes of Arsenal here. I mean, obviously wonderful team, but didn't win anything in Europe or the Cup that year. Ajax won the league and the Champions League unbeaten in 1995. And Porto actually won the league in Portugal, as well as the Taça de Portugal and the Europa League in 2011. Those are the two that I could see that one could make an argument that their achievement is even close.
Are you saying that Mourinho's Porto wasn't the greatest Porto?
Nah, I mean, they were very special, but they didn't win a treble and they didn't go unbeaten.
That's true. They won against AS Monaco in one of the strangest Champions League finals.
I know. It seems like another lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, this would never happen in this day and age. But hey, we're talking about the possibility of Bayer Leverkusen going undefeated and winning a treble. And, you know, I was bold in predicting that Bayer Leverkusen would win the title at the start of the season. But I would have never imagined them being undefeated on Match Day 28.
Yep.
Never in a million years. I mean, yes, they're a great side. Yes, they're well-balanced, but my word, they have really, in addition to, you know, all the character traits I've just mentioned, they've overperformed as well. So yeah, I think it's one of those moments that this team, they're probably not going to perform as well next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we've just been talking about it, it's very hard to perform this well in any season, even when you have all kinds of luck and all kinds of self-belief pushing you forward. Maybe we should talk a little bit about Bayern.
Did we mention the fact that Xabi Alonso actually decided to stay at Bayer Leverkusen? And
Sure.
And, I mean, you know, and this is talking about Bayern. This is a problem for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, basically, you've decided to take my transition in the backwards direction from the direction I was going to take it, but I don't care. Yeah, Xabi Alonso did decide to stay at Leverkusen. And I think that there was, at least for folks outside of Germany who don't really understand the nature of Bayer Leverkusen, either as a club or where it fits into the German football hierarchy or the German football sort of like media sphere, let's just say. I mean, like, Bayer Leverkusen is an extraordinarily good, comfortable club to work at. You know, they're based in a place that is ultimately a pretty nice place to live. Not necessarily Leverkusen, but like the general, like, Nordrhein-Westfalen area.
Düsseldorf.
Yeah, they live in Düsseldorf. They live in Cologne. This is a nice part of the country to be in. It's very well connected to all parts of the world through all the airports in the region. They have great facilities. The company that supports it, you know, supports it well and generously, and the facilities are great. And ultimately, people leave you alone compared to all the other big clubs in Germany. Like, if you can get a job there and succeed and start winning titles, like, stay. Absolutely stay.
We somehow agree with, I don't know who it was, but one of the Sky pundits in England saying that Xabi Alonso, he could have had any job he wanted, but he doesn't have the cojones to take on, you know, Liverpool or Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. He stays at the comfortable, cozy Bayer Leverkusen. Is that what you're saying, that he's actually decided to do?
Yes, in part. I mean, you're not going to get me to go along with that cojones nonsense. but I will definitely say that I think Xabi Alonso sees himself and his career in a much less sort of reactive and short-term sense than I think a lot of these pundits do. I mean, you know, Xabi Alonso, what is he now, 39 years old or something like that? Like, he's still a very young guy. He probably has 20 years of coaching ahead of him.
30 if he's lucky, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants. There is absolutely no hurry. This is literally his first, like, you know, top job in a top league. There is no rush to go to a super club anytime soon. You know, this is literally the first chapter of his managerial career. He doesn't need to, like, go into act two, act three at this point. Like, you know, let him build something at Leverkusen and then do something else. Like, I think that it's a perfectly legitimate and good way to manage one's own life and career.
Yeah, I think Xabi Alonso is a guy who seems to think things through. And I mean, I think if circumstances would have been a little bit different, he might have jumped at one of the offers he had on the table, to be honest, because at Liverpool, who wants to follow Jurgen Klopp? No one, really. Because he can only lose. I mean, the first guy after a legend who's been at the club for, like, 9+ years, you're always going to be getting measured against Jurgen Klopp, and this is a contest. It's hard to win. And the other one, I mean, Bayern München. Who wants to take over a team, you know, where you still have Manuel Neuer and declining Thomas Müller around, and a lot on unrest in the dressing room? Alphonso Davies, one of your best players, on his way to Real Madrid. And Uli Hoeneß, who, you know, is labeled as Logan Roy by some.
Yeah.
Oliver Kahn, to be precise.
Yeah, by some. Oliver Kahn, who, I don't know, is he... we were talking before the pod. Which Roy is he, or which of the inner circle?
He didn't say. He didn't say, but he said, like, about Uli Hoeneß, he sort of was asked about him by Spiegel. Because, I mean, Uli Hoeneß basically... what he did, he was honorary president of Bayern München, and when sort of things really didn't work out last season, well, back then it was really not working out by Bayern standard, well, now we're far beyond that, but anyways, you know, when Bayern were in danger of losing out on the title, Uli Hoeneß came back from retirement and basically shit-canned both Brazzo and Oliver Kahn. I mean, Bayern told the press that Oliver Kahn, he had a cold, couldn't make it. And then Oliver Kahn on the same day said on Twitter, nope, didn't have a cold. I was just thrown out. And Brazzo was allowed to travel with the team, but was, you know, allowed to leave or told to leave after the match against Cologne. So, I mean, everybody knows that there has been a lot of bad blood there. And Oliver Kahn really has kept quiet about it ever since. So he was asked in his first interview with Spiegel about Uli Hoeneß. And he said, you know, have you watched that TV show called Succession? About that media mogul who is getting, like, up there in age and who's losing his senses and who isn't capable of letting go. You know Logan Roy? That's Uli Hoeneß.
Yeah, it's like a documentary about Bayern München. I mean, I guess another way to look at it when it comes to Xabi Alonso and his decision not to go there, at least for the time being, is just looking at the fates of some of the last few managers. I mean, you had Hansi Flick, who had a pretty good reputation going in and, you know, ended up stepping aside. You had Julian Nagelsmann, who had an amazing reputation going into that job, was really thought of as like the golden child of, you know, certainly German, if not European managers, and his reputation took a hit. Thomas Tuchel, who, you know, had already managed a couple of, you know, super clubs and was thought of as, oh, the guy, he's going to sort things out. And now that's not looking like a very accurate assessment. I mean, it's the place where people go to have their reputation smashed at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Niko Kovac managed to win a couple of championships with Bayern, but, you know, didn't make it. Flick came in on sort of like a interim basis, and then that was made permanent. And, I mean, all of that ended badly. And, I mean, ever since Pep Guardiola, basically, they have struggled to find a coach whom they really like. And with Tuchel, you always knew that, well, Tuchel is tiresome to work with. Tuchel is the sort of guy who tires out an entire boardroom within, you know, 2 or 3 years. So it's sort of like a limited period of time that you'll see Tuchel sticking around. But with Nagelsmann, it was different because you thought that, you know, Nagelsmann is in his mid-30s. He could actually start an era here. And when he was let go, he had one of the highest points per match averages of any Bayern coach in the history of the club. I think only Paul Guardiola managed to do better than him, and they let him go because of a skiing holiday.
Yeah.
And, you know, the much dreaded dressing room that you know, coaches are always accused of having lost. I don't think he had lost it at all. And again, I mean, I've mentioned this before, but look at Kimmich, look at Goretzka, look at the sort of players that they were under him at their very best, and look at what sort of players they are now under Tuchel. This is a team that I barely recognize anymore compared to what they were during their first season under Nagelsmann.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, some of the problems that they had in the second season, they were also down to the fact that they had a lot of injuries, a lot of bad luck.
Well, and the fact that they sold their super-duper star striker who scored, you know, half their goals.
Yeah, basically replacing him with a guy who's 35 and used to be on the bench of Stoke. Not that that isn't an accomplishment. I mean, I've never been close to being that accomplished as a footballer, but it's, you know, it's not what you expect in terms of quality from Bayern. But yeah, I mean, just firing Nagelsmann was sort of like a very reactionary thing. And, you know, getting Tuchel in there and having Tuchel sit there during his first presser saying that we are here to win three titles. Everybody who's not here to win three titles is at the wrong place. First thing that happens, well, Freiburg kicks you out of the DFB Pokal, and then there were two. And then you go to up against Manchester City and you look like fucking schoolboys. And you just think, well, you know what? Nagelsmann couldn't have done that much worse. And last season's championship, I mean, yes, great for Tuchel that he finally can say that he's won a German championship, but that wasn't down to him or his players. It was mostly down to the ineptitude of Borussia Dortmund.
Indeed. Where does Bayern go from here? Either in terms of sorting out what is wrong with the squad, the squad balance, or in terms of new leadership. I mean, we kind of referred to it a little bit in our jokey succession discussion earlier with the sort of revolving door of both sporting directors, presidents, coaches recently. I mean, is there a formula to get this club back to a somewhat more stable place? Or is it just going to be a little, you know, a little while in the wilderness? And I mean, by wilderness, I mean, you know, only finishing, you know, second or maybe first, but not every year for a decade.
Well, you know, I think what Bayern are basically going to do, they're going to take a shitload of money into their hands.
Uh-huh.
They're going to spend big on the transfer market. I think a lot of players are going to be let go. You know, Alphonso Davies, not voluntarily, but I mean, they have to sell him because he's keen on joining Real Madrid and only has a contract that lasts one more season, so he's probably going to be gone. I'm wondering if they think, well, you know what, Josh Kimmich, you've seen yourself as a ringleader of late, but you've really not performed to the level of a guy who, you know, can claim to be one. Maybe we should let you go. We hear that Manchester United is a great place for players who've tanked their career. And, you know, these things are going to happen. I think 3, 4 big names are going to be out of the door, and 3, 4, 5, 6 big names are going to enter the fray. And what really is the most interesting question at this moment is, who's the guy who's going to piece that puzzle together? Because they've been talking about bringing Flick back. They've been talking about bringing Nagelsmann back. So this tells me that they are a club that is really struggling for its own identity, and they don't know what they're doing at the moment. They honestly don't. And if they don't get a clear-cut idea of how to handle this very soon, well, yes, they might be out in the wilderness for some time.
Well, I just don't know what we would do about that. Before we leave this entire subject behind, I did want to maybe leave a little bit of space for a little praise for FC Heidenheim, who in this constellation of teams, the four teams involved in the matches that sort of created this, I think they probably put up the most surprising performance, not only because they beat Bayern and they are Heidenheim, but the way that they did it, they came back from 2-0 down, and they showed people that this is a season that I think supporters of this club are basically going to be talking about for the rest of their lives and their children's lives, because some improbable stuff has gone down.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Dinchy, what a season he's been having. Tim Kleindienst, yeah. What a season he's been having. Jan-Niklas Beste. I mean, Jan-Niklas Beste, you know, being nominated for the German national team is probably one of the craziest stories. I mean, he was basically a guy who was on the books of Werder Bremen for many, many years, and he was always loaned out to, you know, places here and there. And Heidenheim actually got him, I think, on a 250,000 euro transfer the year before they got promoted from Werder Bremen. I mean, paying 250,000 euros for a guy who turns into a German national team player 2 years later is crazy. And, well, what you can say is that this club really has its scouting down to T. The players that they've been bringing in, they've sort of been left, forgotten, not wanted other places, and they've pieced together a puzzle that's been working so well. A team that really works so hard. And a team that apparently never stops believing. I mean, being 2-0 down against Bayern, you know, I mean, most teams would have ceased to play football. They didn't. I mean, that is a true testament to their character.
Right. Let's take a little break and then come back and talk some more foosball. All right, here comes part two of Talking Foosball, the part where we talk about, you know, the smaller stuff from the week. And, you know, I think it's not fair to relegate some of this stuff to the small stuff because it's very big for the people who support these teams. But everything is small compared to maybe getting a new champion in the Bundesliga. I want to start with some news that happened over our mid-season impromptu break. Let's just say Christian Streich, the long-serving Christian Streich of SC Freiburg, has let his team and the world know that he's going to be taking a break or maybe stopping coaching for the time being after this season. Is he going to be able to stay away from football or from SC Freiburg? This has been, as he said, his life for most of his adult life. And he's going to have to figure out something completely different to do.
Yeah, I mean, to put that into context, not only has he been the coach there for 12 seasons, he's been an assistant coach, he's coached the second team, he's coached youth teams, he's brought forward Bundesliga players through his youth teams, like Dennis Iogo, for instance. I mean, a lot of people will say, who is Dennis Iogo? Because I've only been listening to this podcast for 5 years. I've never heard of Dennis Iogo. So yeah, I mean, Christian Streich has been working on, you know, bringing forward young players into the Bundesliga for a very long time. Additionally, he's even played there. For goodness sake, he's been at the club for over 30 years now. Over 30 years. I mean, basically, Christian Streich joined SC Freiburg whilst I, a middle-aged man, was still in diapers. So, is he able to keep away from SC Freiburg? I think he most definitely is not going to be able to do that in the long run. But what I do believe is that I think he's honest when he says that, you know what? This sort of high-intensity job has run its course for me. It has demanded a lot, and now I need to slow down. But I could very well imagine him saying in a 2 or 3 years' time that, you know what? I could sort of be like a sporting director, a president, Or maybe even, you know, like do a Paul Dardai and say, you know, I can coach the under 15s, no problems. You know, I do believe that he's probably in agreement about his successor, who's Julian Schuster, former player of his, one of his most trusted guys, a guy who's been promoted from within, not a guy who's been, you know, picked from the outside, but another Freiburg appointment from within, and Freiburg usually tend to do quite well with those.
Yeah, I'm also interested, and I have no insight as to whether this would be something he would be interested in, but I think he would be a natural fit for some kind of role with the DFB. I mean, I think envisioning him in the sort of high intensity spot in terms of like media obligations and other things in the national team coach role might be a bit of a stretch, at least in the short term future. But I mean, the DFB likes to see itself as like above the fray when it comes to a lot of the sort of, you know, internecine fights that happen within German football, or, you know, the sort of moral signaling that the DFB sometimes puts across, sometimes successfully, sometimes not so successfully. And like Christian Streich is just one of those people who just about everybody who pays any attention to German football, like, sees not only as a good coach, but like as a good person and as a positive social influence. And like, I would be shocked if they wouldn't be gagging to get him into some kind of role.
Yeah, I mean, he's the sort of guy who, you know, he found better words on COVID than a lot of politicians. He found better words on immigration, on, you know, refugees coming to Germany after the Syrian war broke out than a lot of German politicians, or pretty much all German politicians. I mean, he basically explained how immigration has functioned and how everybody basically, when you look down your family tree, that everybody is an immigrant, basically. So he's the sort of guy who's really intelligent, he's principled. But then again, when you talk about Freiburg and the DFB, you remember the last guy from Freiburg who went to the DFB?
I do, but why don't you enlighten our listeners?
This was Fritz Keller, who used to be president of SC Freiburg, went to the DFB, became the president of the DFB, and made some comparison of, Rainer Koch, who used to be the vice president, or, you know, some high function. I mean, he's basically been a guy who has been in higher offices at the DFB for a long, long time. And he compared him to Nazi judge, whilst he was rather outraged by something that Rainer Koch had said. And yeah, so that was leaked to the media, probably by Rainer Koch himself, come to think of. But, you know, it was leaked to the media. Keller had to leave. And this is the other thing about the DFB. I mean, yes, they see themselves above the fray, but internally, the DFB is filled with people who've been there for ages, people who are leeches, people who suck the lifeblood out of the coffers of the DFB, who enrich themselves, who are really not interested in what is best for amateur football. They're there to enrich themselves and for themselves, and working with those people takes it out of anybody who's just a tad principled. And Christian Streich is definitely very, very principled as a man.
Yep, I agree. And I think the DFB would be much more interested in Christian Streich than Christian Streich would be interested in the DFB. But, you know, we shall see. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's sort of bubbling under the tip top of the table. I mean, you mentioned earlier that VfB Stuttgart are now level on points with Bayern. I think they're both on 60 after Stuttgart took down Dortmund 1-0 at the Westfalenstadion. How much should we read into this? Not just in terms of, you know, this year's results, and of course there's still six matches to go and, you know, things are, you know, changing all the time, but Stuttgart, as we all know, is a club that has something of the infrastructure that at least could credibly sustain a longer run in the upper reaches of the table if they keep doing things right.
Yes, this is what we tend to say about them when they keep doing things right and then they get relegated the next season usually.
I know. I mean, how much are you willing to let yourself believe that this Stuttgart run has legs, that it's going to be something that sticks around for a little while? I mean, you know, at least Sebastian Hoeneß seems to be happy to stay there for the time being, and that's probably a big building block of their success at the moment. I mean, I don't know how successfully they're going to be able to hold on to some of their best players over the coming summer, or, you know, whether they have financial imperatives that will lead them to do otherwise.
I mean, well, talking about holding onto your best players over the summer, well, let's not forget that they lost Endo to Liverpool.
Absolutely.
They lost Bonasosa to, was it Ajax Amsterdam? They lost Mavropanos to some uninteresting Premier League club, West Ham, wasn't it? Not that important anyways. So they lost three really vital pieces of their puzzle over the last summer, and look at them now. I think that, yes, they do have the right coach in place. It's great to see that he's not going to join Bayern, even though he's coached at Bayern at youth level. I think for them, they have got two great strikers on their hands that they can, you know, both of them on the pitch at the same time work out. One of them on the pitch and on the other one on the bench has worked out. And basically, sort of like, you just think that, well, they could actually get away with selling either Undav or Girassi. They could actually get away with that and still be a great team. And I mean, a lot of the players that they do have at the club, like Nübel, wasn't being able to make it at Bayern after, you know, he was a young keeper at Schalke and was loaned out here and there and there all around. And now he's suddenly found a home. And Undav, you know, Werder Bremen had him, thought, well, he's not good enough. Let's sell him. You know, some of the other guys that they have at Stuttgart, they've all been weighed and found too light by a lot of teams in the Bundesliga. And now they create this great unit. And yeah, I do think that if they keep like 8 or 9 of their starting 11, they're going to be fine next season. Maybe not, you know, Champions League fine, because I think that Borussia Dortmund or RB Leipzig, either one of that team that isn't going to make it, is going to come back with a vengeance, is going to spend a lot of money on the transfer market, and so is Bayern. So, you know, I mean, getting into the Champions League twice in a row is going to be a hard trick to pull off, but you know, I definitely see them as a side that can establish themselves in the top half of the table under the right circumstances.
Yeah, and it would be a good thing. The Bundesliga has definitely suffered in some recent years of having some big clubs going exactly the wrong direction. Speaking of that, let's talk about the relegation fight in this year's Bundesliga. We do have at least one quote-unquote big club who is still in a spot of bother, along with a couple of other clubs who, you know, have some history and tradition, but are not quite of that stature. Cologne, they actually got a good result this weekend. They came back from 1-0 down at home to Bochum and got 2 goals in injury time, doing the Man United 99 act to get one over on Bochum. Bochum, I think, still have a lead of, what, 3 points over them in the table down there? Let me look that up real quick. I think Bochum are still on 26. Yeah, and Cologne. Now, Cologne are 4 points back of that. It's Mainz who are 3 points back of Bochum. Mainz also got a win. They basically smashed Darmstadt 4-0. They illustrated that gap at the bottom between Bochum, Mainz, and Cologne, who are sort of trying to fight their way out of this relegation problem, and Darmstadt, who are not. How do you see this one shaking out? I mean, it's basically going to be one team gets out scot-free, one team goes to the relegation playoff, and one team goes down.
You know, I'm being wary of how these things can go. I don't think that for Werder Bremen and Borussia Mönchengladbach are in the clear just yet. I think both of them still need one win at least.
Sure. Well, Gladbach, to be fair, did get their first win in about a month and a half against away to Wolfsburg, actually. And, you know, Bremen drew with Frankfurt on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, have to play Leverkusen next week, which is, you know, totally easy.
Frankfurt, yeah. And, you know, Wolfsburg, well, talking about not being scot-free, Wolfsburg and Union Berlin are, you know, two of the other teams that still need a win. And I think Bochum basically needs 2 from the last 6. I mean, right about now, I'd be worried if I was Bochum, because Timo Schulz has had Cologne playing more stably since the start of the Rückrunde, and they've been hard side to beat. They've, you know, picked up an awful lot of draws, not many wins, but they're difficult to beat, and you could very well imagine them getting 2 or 3 more wins out of the last 6. I mean, that's the type of team that they are right about now. And, you know, they even gave Bayer Leverkusen a hard ride for the money. Even they were down to like 10 men after a very short time. So I think Bochum should be worried. Cologne could very well get those 2 or 3 wins. And Mainz in particular under Henriksen, wow, what a turnaround that has been. I mean, it seems like whenever minds seem to be in a spot which they possibly cannot get out of, they hire Dane and things turn out all right.
Nice. Very nice. Anything else we need to talk about, Nick?
Would you believe me if I told you that Bayern München have a fan club which has managed to establish a team in the first division of its country?
I would only believe it because you told me about it earlier this week.
Yeah.
And I love it.
It's absolutely true. I mean, the thing is, there's a team in Mongolia, of all places. Mongolia, which is basically the size of all of Western Europe and even more. A country which is inhabited by 3 million people. 30,000 of which, it turns out, speak German. And, you know, there was a bunch of students who went to Germany, studied German, and founded a fan club in 2014 when they came back to Mongolia. And, you know, said fan club started a team called Bavarians FC. So they sort of started competing in tournaments and all of this sort of stuff and went really well for them. So 4 years ago, they, you know, they started playing in the fourth division of the country. And lo and behold, none of the fan club members play anymore because they've professionalized and professionalized, you know, much the way like Kendall or Roman would have done in succession. And as it turns out, they had a promotion playoff, Bavarians FC. They had it in front of 100 spectators. They served German beer and sausages. And, you know, Bavarians FC, they actually played against, you cannot make this up, against BCH Lions. BCH Lions. Yes, so the Bavarians,
right.
Bayern played against Die Löwen.
Die Löwen. Oh my god.
And they won. So,
As they do.
As, you know, as Bavarians tend to do. So the guy who is actually head of the fan club is called Otgon Bayer Olanku. Probably going to butchering that name, but you know, he's on the stands and watching the match, as you know, the quality of football is not as is too high for him, for, you know, his footballing skills. But yeah, they actually are placed 6,500 kilometers from Munich in the lovely place of Ulaanbaatar.
Oh, okay, that's the metropolis of Mongolia. Yeah,
I take it is. Yes, but I mean, again, it's a country the size of Western Europe being inhabited by less people than there are in Norway.
I was about to say, like, Norway's like the big place compared to that.
You know, I mean, when you drive through Norway, it feels lonely from time to time, especially when you're up in the north where I lived for some years, and you just drive and drive and drive, and when it's winter and you drive through this road, it's sort of like an Arctic desert being inhabited by nothingness. Mongolia is that with an awful lot more. It actually has an actual desert called Gobi.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, besides Bavarians FC, they're also famous for Genghis Khan.
I'm smelling a ground-hopping trip being cooked up as we speak.
Yes! I mean, go on to our Patreon's page.
And just, if you donate $4,000 a month.
Yes.
To send Matt and Nick to Mongolia. You can even come along.
That's our goal. I mean, if you pay for yourself and take us, you can even be on the podcast. And
My God.
Talking about money, Bavarians FC are actually looking for a new sponsor for next season. So if you want to sponsor them too, you could take us on the trip of a lifetime to Mongolia and see your team play.
Okay, that is it for this edition of Talking Foosball. Really nice to be back on with you, Nick. Really nice to be back on with anybody. We've been away for a little while. Many thanks to our producer, Aiden Rantoul, as well, for being patient with us.
It's been a minute, yeah. Yes, it's been great being back. And, well, hopefully I can persuade Mike and Jasmine, or at least one of them, to come back next week with me to do a little bit of Aufstieg. And, yeah, the two of us, and hopefully Terry DeFallon, who was stuck at work tonight, can talk some football 2 weeks from now.
Dig it, dig it, dig it. All right, that is it for me, Matt Herman. Bis zum nächsten Mal, y'all.